In both the first reading and the gospel, there's an unnamed widow. Both of these unnamed widows seem to be at the end of their rope. In the Old Testament, she was going to bake a little bread and then expected that she and her son would die of starvation. In the New Testament, Jesus names her financial status as poverty. And yet both of these women act with the utmost kindness and charity. Elijah asks her to bring him a cup full of water, and without hesitation, she stops gathering sticks for her fire and for her son, her, and she goes to get the water. When Elijah asks her for a bit of bread, she apologizes because she says that she was breaking the last of the flour for her and her son, and then they'd be out. What strikes me is that she held out hope to the end. She kept hoping and believing that God would rescue them. If I was on the point of starvation, it could be really easy to justify being cranky and stingy. Right? We're about to die here. Get your own cup of water. Or else, you know, if you want bread, go to the rich. Beggar, don't beg or steal the little that I have for me and my son. But this impoverished, unnamed widow who's at death's door acts with such kindness, which makes me believe that this was a well-practiced pattern for her. She wasn't just being polite to a stranger. Over the course of her life, she had cultivated a generous heart and a hopeful spirit. I think that's why the Lord sent her Elijah. In the gospel, Jesus contrasts the widow in poverty with the scribes who show off their fancy clothes and spend their time taking advantage of wealthy widows. Anybody here? They would never have made such time for a poor woman. Jesus condemns them for making lengthy prayers. Now, there's nothing wrong with prayers, nor with length of prayers. But he condemns the scribes because their prayers weren't directed to God. They were aimed at the wealthy widows in order to get more of their wealth. Over the course of these scribes' lives, they were cultivating greedy hearts, conniving spirits. The scribes would certainly have argued that they knew God, but it was really themselves dressed up as God that they worshipped. The poverty-stricken, unnamed widow, on the other hand, knew God enough to trust him with her last 2 cents. She trusted him enough to be completely stripped of the pillars of this world. Money. Power. She had already lost her husband. She had no means of financial support. And yet she continued to give to God. Like the woman in the Old Testament, that reveals that over the course of her life, she had been cultivating sacrificial generosity and a trusting heart. Jesus says that all the others contributed from their surplus wealth. The Greek there literally says simply that others contributed from their surplus, implying that this is not just about money, but rather that over the course of their lives, these other contributors had been cultivating, putting their needs first, their wants second, God as the left foot. Jesus doesn't want leftovers. He says pretty clearly in that last line of today's gospel, he wants our whole livelihood. Over the course of our lives, what have we been cultivating? What kind of heart? What kind of spirit? Would others say that generosity and charity, or stinginess and selfishness, most characterize your heart and spirit? In your relationship with your spouse, or parents, or friends, or co-workers, do you act unselfishly? In the second reading today, from the letter to the Hebrews, we're told that Christ came the first time to take away the sins of men, and that he will appear a second time to bring salvation to those who eagerly await him. When's the last time you named your sins to let them take them away from you? And if we're not eagerly awaiting him, does that mean that we're focused on this world? On advancement in this world? On work, on family, on pleasure, on video games, on sleep, on clothes, on appearance, etc.? Are even our prayers really directed only at ourselves and our own interests? How often in the course of making it in the world do we look up, remembering that this will disappear, but God and the things of God will not? We're a people of hope. This is one of the three most important virtues, a theological virtue. Maybe you had hope before the election for different results, whether regarding a particular candidate or an amendment. Strictly speaking, that would be called wishful thinking, not theological hope. True theological hope is placed in God, or the promises of God. Regardless of any election results, our hope is in God and God alone. And therefore, regardless of any election results, our work must continue to be the work of God. Yeah, I'm disappointed that Amendment 3 passed. But the work that we as a church do to support women, pregnant women, single mothers, and their children, continues regardless. That's why we support causes like My Life Clinic, St. Raymond Society, God willing, the soon to be St. John Women's Health and Fertility Center. As Christians, we experience disappointment in the things of this world. But our hope, our true hope, never wavers. Our two widows today knew this. What do we need to do to cultivate the hopeful spirit, sacrificial generosity, the loving trust of the widows in today's reading? How do we break out of the prison of our own selfish ego and begin to see the beauty of the others around us and the surpassing beauty of the Christ who's always right beside us? Whether at length or at short, talk to him. Tell him you love him. Tell him you want to cultivate a generous heart, sacrificial life, and a hopeful spirit. Offer to him your whole life. Lay it on the altar with a yes. Here is our temple treasure, where we can make an offering not from our surplus, but from our whole life. So here's the homework for the week. Do a poverty check this week. Give away the clothes or other items that you haven't used in the last 3 months. Maybe give away something that you need, that you really like. Let it be an exercise of trusting in God to care for you as the true widow's widow.